The inaugural edition of Rivals, we're calling it. We might become more creative in the next few weeks, but when I think back as a much younger man here in Melbourne, we're talking late 90s, we're talking early 2000s, you know, basketball was absolutely booming. There was no doubt about that. Go down to Rod Laver Arena and see the Melbourne Tigers in action. Of course, the Victorian Titans, who were Southeast Melbourne Magic at one stage. Just great events. 15,000. Some of the biggest names in basketball in this country going head-to-head. Well, our two guests today need no introduction whatsoever. In the studio with me is Chris Anstey. Great to see you, Chris.
It's great to be here, and what a fantastic idea this is.
And on the line is a man you know very well, and that is Mark Brackey. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, fellas.
Good to talk to you. Obviously, plenty going on currently. We might get to a bit of that very, very shortly, but... Chris, you started your career at the Melbourne Tigers. That was back in 1994. Then you moved across to Southeast Melbourne Magic, played there for three seasons, 95 to 97. Of course, ducked over to the NBA for a little bit, came back, and they had been renamed the Victoria Titans there for a couple of years, 2001-2. And then you went back to the Tigers for a stint, won some championships, obviously, along the way. And Mark, obviously, we know your time with the Tigers, which was quite lengthy, 1993 to 2002. And a little stint up in Brisbane as well towards the tail end of your career. Take us back, Chris. We might start with you first. I mean, the rivalry between when we had, you know, two Melbourne teams going head-to-head, you know, with the great Lindsay Gaze, Brian Gorgin in town. It was a pretty spectacular time here in Melbourne.
It really was. And I guess for me, brand new to the sport, I was really spoiled because that's what I walked into. And, you know, just we've got Mark here on the line, but... Yeah, Mark joined the Tigers when I had just started playing in the Melbourne Tigers Junior Club, and yeah, he walked in the door and he was just a presence straight away, and he gave me a really first-hand view of what it meant to be a professional basketball player. I didn't realise 2 years later I'd be competing against him in front of 15,000 people every week, but it really was. We were spoiled. The fans were amazing. We really rode on the back of the boom in the NBA, and it was a wonderful time.
Mark, when you sort of, you know, sit back and reflect today, what are some of the things that first sort of come to mind when you think of the great rivalry?
I think any sport needs rivalries, and you know what? Sometimes you try to manufacture these things, and you try to have a crosstown rival or whatever. But there was a genuine. I think it started with Brian Gorgin, to be honest, even though he originally started with the Melbourne Tigers, which is quite ironic, and he was a flamboyant shooter. Then, but he had this. All out, in your face, defensive grind, and it was so he really, I think, instigated a lot of the rivalry between the Tigers and the Magic, and it was like I said, it was genuine. You know, we used to hate to see each other before. We used to go to shoot around, one would go one door, the other guys would go out the other door, and the hype before the games and the lead up to the games was tremendous, and every sport I think needs rivalry, and that was one of the big pluses, I think, for the NBL back then because it was so genuine.
So I imagine were there other players who had swapped over in that period, or were they sort of, no, you played for the Tigers during that period, or you played for the Southeast Melbourne Magic, or anyone that crossed over?
There weren't too many. I got a lot of grief when I left the Tigers and went to the Magic, and you know, I tried to explain at the time, but probably as Mark said, because everyone just hated each other so much, I was just doing the worst thing I possibly could, but for me, and I suppose it's the other thing, and Mark just mentioned the way that Brian Gorgin approached it, and you know, you look across the other end, and Lindsay Gaze's feet back in the armchair. Yeah, you're wondering if he's awake sometimes when he's coaching.
But I remember.
That was drilled into us, and the way that each club recruited its players, I think the Magic tended to try to recruit younger, I suppose, talented athletes on their way up with something to prove, whereas the Tigers picked established players who were looking to be placed into a system and win a championship, and was very, very different cultures. And, you know, I remember Gorge, we'd be working our asses off at training on a Sunday afternoon, and he's yelling that the Melbourne Tigers are on the golf course because they don't want it as bad as what we do. And, you know, they're more talented, but we're going to work hard. And that was always a mantra. And you're right, we were taught to hate the Melbourne Tigers. And I can't remember many other players leaving, but, you know, there are a lot of players, you know, Andrew Parkinson and Ray Gordon spring to mind that really hated each other when they played. But like Mark said, it was a genuine rivalry.
If you want to get involved, and if you're a basketball fan listening, you 9429 1116 to pledge your allegiance and let us know your memories of this great rivalry while we've got Mark and Chris with us. And Mark, just talking about as fresh I can see it right now, the contrast in the two coaches, Brian Gorgian pacing up and down the sidelines, the Diet Cokes in full glare, and then Lindsay Gaze almost just kicking back like he was at sort of like Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, no, Gorge had the high pants, had the perm going, and strutting up and down the sidelines, and actually he would even step on the court. And we had a play where we'd always run the same positions, and we had Marcus Timmins, I remember one time, and he was running down there, and Gorge was really annoying me because he was on the court. So I said, mate, let's swap spots, and I want to clean him up, because he's got to get off our court. But that's what it was, and it was all through there. Lindsay was, I know we'd talk about before the game, he goes, look, Brian, the Magic want to grind it out. They want a 55-54 win. Lindsay would always say, look, we want it to entertain. We want to ultimately win the game, but we also want to showcase basketball at best. And so he was more along the lines of trying to do what was best for basketball. Sometimes it may have backfired on us, but he was always trying to celebrate the flamboyant type of things, and yet he was such a conservative type coach. He'd sit back. A lot of times he'd let us call the plays and get in that situation where sometimes Gorge, what I hear from the sideline, he'd always yelling out. And, very first play, he'd be yelling out, no foul, don't foul, don't foul. So the referee's here, oh, they're not trying to foul. Well, we won't call a foul then. So he manipulated everything that way.
Got a smile on your face, Chris.
It was funny because we'd be counting how many times we hit Andrew Gaze when he cut through the key, and if we hadn't done it up to 15, 20 times a quarter, we used to get our butts kicked. But he'd be, you're right, he's yelling out, don't foul, but we were absolutely instructed to make sure Andrew didn't run any, particularly Andrew, run anywhere without getting hit.
So in Brian's case, we know he had that real defence-first mindset, and the great coaches, I suppose, who've gone on and had championship success, sort of build things around defence. Was it as obvious as we've got to stop Gaze, we've got to stop Copeland?
It was wearing him down. Every little hit you could get in took a little nick out of them that if we could stick around for three quarters, three and a half quarters. And, in our mind, we knew that if we played the way that we played and the way that we trained, that we could break any team at some stage. That could be, if a poor team, it might be early in the first half against a great team like the Tigers. In a three-game championship series, it might not be until the end of game three, but we believed that we could.
Yep.
And that was just a part of the process of, every single hit you get, every single time you sprint the lane, every time. For us, and I suppose for me as a big, I turned up to the league weighing 87 kilos, and by the time I got to the Magic, I was just over 100. But I used to love it when Gaze and Copeland started trying to take the game on their own back, because it meant Mark didn't touch the ball. And for me, that, what do you weigh, 130 kilos, Hoax, when you played?
Oh, no, not quite that much. Maybe that now. But you try to utilise that. But also, Andrew played so many minutes. I think he averaged 48.5 minutes one season when we averaged 40. Well, it's a 48-minute game, but he didn't come out the whole season and play the overtime. So you always knew that, if you can wear these people down, obviously it's going to get in your favour late in the game.
Paul and Glenroy, boys, has called in to join the conversation. G'day, Paul.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, guys. I used to go watch a Magic through a guy called Ron Hanlon. He used to give me tickets to a lot of the games, and they were actually really buzzing when Robert Rose and Bolden were playing. And just some of the functions I went to with Brian Gorgian, he's probably one of the best speakers I've ever heard. And I know a lot of the AFL clubs have used him in the past as a speaker. I just want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think I couldn't agree more. He's one of the best speakers that I've ever heard, and he had an ability to inspire each one of his teammates. Yeah, since I've retired, I suppose people always reflect back, and he sits in the same sort of a category as Craig Bellamy and those coaches that almost transcend their sport, and they ask what made him a great coach, and I think he had the ability to make everyone in the group feel like the most important person in the world, and that came through the message he delivered and how he delivered it. But once we knew how much he cared for us, we'd do anything for him. But you're right, the Magic was a little bit different. The Tigers was the family club. It was where members who'd been a part of that group and that club for generations came, and you know, the Magic was an upstart. We were throwing, you know, flares in the air. We had Magic Man running around doing cartwheels, and the functions were different. There was loud music. There, you know, it almost flew in the face of the way we played. But no, for me, Gorge is as an inspirational speaker as I've heard, and you know, he got a lot out of a lot of young players.
So amongst the fierce rivalry, and you both can answer this, I mean, obviously Brian sort of started under Lindsay. He's come out from the States and then gone on to forge his own great coaching career. What was the relationship like between those two through a pretty fierce rivalry? Mark?
Well, you know what? I think they had a lot of respect for each other. There was no doubt that, but it was just... it was like, you know, if you talk about rivalries, if you're on another team, I hate you. Simple as that.
Yeah.
And if you're on my team, well, I'll do anything for you. So that's the way I was as a player, and they had their team. So Lindsay was supposed to hate the Tigers, the Magic, and then Brian was supposed to hate us. But only they had also a respect to say, okay, they can see what they've done in the past, and everyone's working on a scheme, their ideas, to ultimately win a championship. So then it was a mutual respect amongst them. It wasn't as a, they didn't disrespect them. There was no mouthing off. It was more, you know, players having a go at each other. You never saw those two stand up yelling at each other on the sidelines. They respected each other's zones and their areas, and there was something, it was perfect.
And you couldn't get, Chris, probably two more contrasting sort of styles, but obviously both, you know, just... When we look back, I mean, Lindsay Gaze doesn't need me to read out his resume here and what he's done, and recently honoured over in the United States, and Brian's gone on to coach in China, and I mean, all of us would love to see him come back. I don't know whether it's any form of a possibility, but different in the way they went about it, but gee, they racked up the titles.
Yeah, they really did. I think, you know, when I started coaching, Ian Stacker actually said one thing to me. He said, you can't teach ability. And I think those two coaches had... Because of their success and because I think they had a strong belief in the systems that they taught, they knew who they needed to recruit. And they always recruited players who would fit into the system and fit into the type of coaching that they provided. So you know, a player who was valuable for Gorge would probably be almost wasted in the Melbourne Tigers and vice versa. You know, there might be a veteran player looking to come and finish out a career and play with a group of established players. It probably wouldn't fit the Magic. So yeah. I think they both did an extraordinary job of recruiting the right players for their systems. And again, it just added to the rivalry because the players were completely different as well as the coaches. But as Mark said, I think especially when you walk away from it, when your career is done, you understand how much they do respect each other. And they were so different. But I know Brian learned a lot from Lindsay. He just didn't tell us at the time.
Oh, great assist to Kelly. Couldn't put it in. But Anstey drops the two and draws the foul. A potential three-point play.
There was nothing Warwick Giddey could do in that situation. Giddey's just a mere mortal at around 6 foot six. But look at that. The seven-footer. Chris Anstey, great position. We saw that McKinnon dunk a couple of seconds ago. Anstey missed the three-point play, but Kelly gets the offensive rebound. This will rub salt in the wound. Ronaldson couldn't get it. That's 22 the difference. Bradke races the ball down the court. He really has been the one and only shining light for the Tigers so far.
Oh, huge game by Bradke. But...
Well, there you go. 1996, I think it was Steve Quartermaine all the way back then. I can recognise that voice. Chris Anstey in the studio, Mark Bradke on the phone. Our rivalry segments. We look back on the great rivalry between the Melbourne Tigers and the South East Melbourne Magic back in the day. That final series, 1996, of course, the Magic won over the Tigers. Just take us back to your memories, Chris and Mark, listening to that.
Yeah, two things stood out. I missed a free throw and Hoags brought the ball down the floor. I wasn't sure what was going on. But no, that was obviously game three because Melbourne beat us really easy. I think they beat us by 37 in game one. Mm. And, you know, the next game was 2 days later and almost like I was saying before, that we still had the belief that the longer the series went on, we had to find a way to keep our heads above water, and the longer it went, the better we got. And, you know, probably my everlasting memory of game two was it was a tight game all game, and Mike Kelly got fouled in the dying seconds of the game and had a Band-Aid hanging off his ear. And if you've seen Mike shoot a free throw, he's got a really interesting preparation before he shoots it, and includes winding it up back behind his head to loosen his shoulders. And, you know, he stepped up and made both two free throws to put us up four and essentially ice the game in game two. And
yep.
I think we knew because it had been drilled into us again that now this was ours. Mm. And, you know, that clip said we're up 22 and we won that last game by 37 and really felt that we just had more in our legs than what the Tigers did. And, you know, for me, that was my first ever championship. It was amazing. And like you said, 15,000 people every single game, and it was crazy.
Yeah, it was pumping.
An amazing memory, and probably one that Hoags has swiped from his memory, I'm guessing.
Well, you got revenge the year after, Mark, but in 97, that would have been a tough one to swallow, though, in 96.
Yeah, I've no recollection, really, of any of that.
You were playing golf.
Yeah, I was busy planning my trip, but no. There was always... There were some big lopsided results and all those, and there was also some really tight matches, and there was different heroics from different people all the time, which is sometimes if you look back, it always says, oh, it's just a couple of people doing it all, but different people stepped up in different roles. You know, there are little highlights from that grab with Dean Templeton and Quarters calling the game. I know Warwick Giddey's had some big picks on Mike Kelly at half court, and I think he put his two through his tongue, and, you know, different plays. And so sometimes, you get all these memories flowing back, and the intensity. I remember one time Ronaldson got kneed in the head and had blood pouring everywhere. It was a pretty incidental contact, like accidental stuff, but, some amazing scenes and memories, and just the passion and the desire from both teams to try and get the win, especially against each other too.
Yeah, next week we're going to have Mike Kelly and Warwick Giddey with their reflections. John's out in Whittlesea, joins the conversation. G'day, John.
Good afternoon, boys. How are you?
Going well.
Guys, I'm 62 years old and probably hadn't heard a lot about basketball until the, what would they call them, all the black fellas that come out? I mean, the Globetrotters.
Yes, the Harlem Globetrotters. More eloquently put there, John.
Yes, then I started to watch the basketball, and there was a little guy by the name of Andre Moses. He was a great little player.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next question was if you could tell us throughout the afternoon about some of these guys' sons that have become great players, some of your great players. So that was just a couple of questions to talk about throughout the afternoon, if you wouldn't mind, guys.
Yeah, look, I think just to take off from there, it's one of the most enjoyable things now that you can remove yourself from your own career and spend time as a parent, I suppose, and watching each other's kids come through. And, you know, probably the most obvious couple at the moment are Dante Exum, and who's obviously Cecil Exum's son, and Ben Simmons, who's Dave Simmons' son. They'll both be in the NBA next year, and Ben's projected to be a number one pick. But Bruce Bolden's son's about to go off to UCLA. Brad Pinot's son's over in the States playing college, and I think he's in his sophomore year. It's just a lot of fun, and of course a lot of the players with daughters. Darren Smith's daughter's one of the best players in the country. There's a bunch going around, and it's a lot of fun. You get to see each other around the traps. My daughter is in the same training squad as Mark's son, and so
Chris, because we were talking during the break that, you know, back when the rivalry was on, I mean, you didn't want to be in each other's company, and now all these years later, there's quite a few of you, Mark, yourself, and others who are involved, still in the game of basketball, developing young talent and working with, you know, the next crop, and, you know, obviously some memories of that, but now sort of, you know, been able to have a good friendship post all the rivalry.
Yeah, and I think that's really important because it's nice to relive them from both sides of the fence, I suppose. But I think because we did go through such a golden era of basketball, that, you know, we've got something to share with the young kids today, because sometimes they might not have seen it. They might have missed that the last decade when basketball was struggling. So the ability that we have as coaches, as people just on the periphery of the sport, to actually be able to share what it used to be like here, to share that, you know, Mark and I both got the opportunity to go and play in the NBA for a while, to share that there's an opportunity to do that if you do certain things. It's a lot of fun, but more than anything, I think Mark might say the same, but the friends you meet, the camps you go on, the teammates you have over the years, that as a parent, you know, if my kids can have that, then I'm the happiest dad in the world.
Yep.
Yeah, without a doubt, you know, I was lucky enough to go to the Corporal Cup yesterday, so I'm sitting there with some other people and from various sporting things, and they ask you the same question. And it's not the games that you forget. It's not the, you know, the training sessions, but it's sitting on the bus, it's the trash talking, it's playing cards, it's riding the highs and the lows. And they're the things that you miss most out of playing basketball. And now as our kids go through there, like Chris was saying, his daughter, my son made the state Victorian team, even though I said my wife that, you know, he's part South Australian. But there's always a rivalry somewhere. But to see other guys, kids coming through there, and Andrew Vlaff's son was there, and Shane Hill's daughter was there. And so, you know, it means that we're all getting older. Our kids don't listen to us, so they don't think that we know anything. But it's great to see that that they're still pursuing a great sport that we enjoyed so much about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I say, we're down in Tasmania, just picking up on what Mark said, my daughter will not listen to me for a second. I've tried to tell her a few things over the years, and I saw Mark down in Tassie for the under-16s, and I think you remember I said, Mark, can you just have a quick chat to my daughter about A, B, and C on a basketball court? So we found a time we happened to be walking past each other in the hallway. You've never seen a more attentive person. Yeah, the message was fantastic, and Mark told it a little bit differently than what I would. But she's walked away thinking she's learnt the best lesson in the world. I've been trying to tell her for 12 months, but it just took another voice.
Parents know.
Right. It's a constant battle. Yeah. You know, I take my son to training. I said, how about just doing a 2-foot jump stop inside the key? Just be on balance. Well, what do you know? I said, no, Akeem Olajuwon does it. Goes to him, and LeBron goes to him, and everyone goes to him. So you're saying that he's wrong, and I'm wrong, and they're wrong. So sometimes you get close that they're listening, but most of the time they're like, whatever.
Hey, what was it like for both of you? You know, just step outside the Tigers v the Magic. Then in the latter part of your career, Mark, you go up to Brisbane. Yep. Chris, you're back at the Tigers, and here you are in a pretty fierce series against each other. That was, I think, was 06-07.
Yeah,
that was my last year.
Yeah,
yeah. You should talk. You've got better memories of me than that one, Hoax.
Yeah, well, that was. I had a situation where I was with the Tigers for a very long time.
Yeah,
and then Andrew Gaze retired, and then Leonard Copeland was let go. So I was sort of in a situation where, what do I do? Do I continue on with the Tigers or not? And they sort of put an offer to me, and I was like, I don't know, do I retire or not? But Brisbane came along with having a good offer. And it was sort of a complete circle because I actually started my basketball playing in Brisbane, just in that's where I started in high school. So I was like, gee, that's a nice way to go there. My parents live on the Gold Coast. I'll live there and see them all. So I sort of went up there, and then the next year the Tigers had success, and I was up there and we'll try, and we sort of had a few disruptions and all that. But then in my final year, we sort of clicked. And Chris will be able to say, sometimes your team clicks and it really works. You don't really know why or how or whatever's going on, but it really worked for us. And I think we won 23 out of our last 24 games with the Brisbane Bullets. We had to come to Melbourne to play the Tigers. We lost that game too, but to come out and then to win game three against my old club in Melbourne, and so all of a sudden, you know, I didn't want to retire, but I thought, you know what, it doesn't get much better than this to win it back at sort of home, you know, that, well, home for a long, long time. And to go out on top was just an awesome experience for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the great part, isn't it? I mean, you can win championships in the early part of your career. And sometimes, I mean, you often hear young AFL footballers, Chris, that they don't have, you know, maybe hasn't quite soaked in. But as you get older, you really cherish that opportunity to get back on the big stage again and win one.
And look, the championship in 96 that we won that was played earlier, I was brand new. Like you say, you're so naive to what's going on around you to some extent. And your role's not as big as what it becomes later on. And I think whatever players say, you know, the AFL have the substitutes and all that. So, yeah, the larger your role, you know, you probably do appreciate it more, and it means a little bit more to you. So, that, you know, we were lucky to win two championships with the Tigers when I came back. And they were both amazing because, as Mark said, he'd left, Copeland left, Gaze left, and everyone had sort of – they hadn't written us off, but I think they thought we were going to go through a rebuilding phase. And I'd just come back from Europe and – you know, I think everybody took it upon themselves and were a little bit insulted that their roles weren't valued because they always had the other big three to carry the load. And again, it was this wonderful team chemistry that just clicked under Al Westover, who'd also taken over from Lindsay. And everyone had loved Al as an assistant coach for a number of years. I'd played for him as a junior. And as Mark said, I mean, I don't know how you teach that. I don't know how you coach it. Sometimes it just clicks. And we had this amazing year. And didn't quite get it done 3 years in a row. The Bullets got us that year, but it was a wonderful period of time for us.
Mark, as we close, I mean, we talk about this great rivalry. Here we've got Melbourne United, who have been formed over the last couple of years, and, you know, we hear in the background that there's, you know, a lot of people who'd love to get the Melbourne Tigers back re-established in the NBL. I mean, both give us your take on that and whether we can get that fierce Melbourne rivalry back, because obviously for the growth of the NBL right now, Brisbane, obviously, they want to tick that box and get them back, and so they should, but also get a second Melbourne team, and then we've got a full NBL. Where do you think both of that is at, and can we ever get back to those glory days of two Melbourne teams going head-to-head in a really packed arena, you know, with 10,000, 15,000 here?
I think that's it's a really important aspect of the game, of any sport. You know, obviously I'd love to see the Tigers come back in there, but whatever shape or form it happens to, if it can come back, and you want general rivalry, a genuine rivalry, because you know what? Sport needs heroes and villains. They need someone to cheer for. They need to support someone. You don't want to be too plain. And, you know, one of the greatest things about Collingwood, I'm not a Collingwood supporter, but you know what? Sometimes you're like, you know what? I hate Collingwood so much. I'll just go there and boom, just to go along. And it drags people in, and you want that. And a rivalry, a cross-town rivalry, whether it be in, or obviously in basketball, but you see it. You saw the victory in Melbourne City last night as well. You need that. You want that. And the fans love it as well, because they can come along and you're all in the one spot. Normally when you go on the road, the visiting team doesn't get too many supporters and it's all one-sided, which is fine. But nothing beats when you've got two, you know, passionate people on either side. It's like, you know, they always talk about the AFL Grand Final. There's a lot of corporate there. It doesn't quite have the same feel as a prelim final. So you want that. The animosity felt on the court, but also in the fans, in the stands. You know, it's what players play for, to be honest.
Chris?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And I think the last part to add to that is, you know, one of the reasons the AFL, I think, does things so well, they continually bring past players back and they've got a home. The longevity of each club, for the most part, is just... You know, when Mark and I are sitting in our rocking chairs going, we've still got a basketball home.
Yeah.
And there's not a Victorian professional basketball player at the moment that has a home yet. And just a way to be able to recapture that and, you know, make sure that everyone still feels welcomed and that everyone who's played professional basketball in this state, because there have been some, not just the Tigers and the Magic, there have been amazing rivalries even before us and after us. But just a way to get back together. And, you know, I was lucky to play in the Masters games last week, share some stories with some of the old Adelaide 36ers players, the Magic, the Tigers. That's what it's about. It's about sharing those experiences later on in life, and why wouldn't you do it at a basketball game?
Great stuff. Chris, thanks for coming in. Mark, really appreciate catching up and going down memory lane. I can still see it. Rod Laver Pack, 15,000. Gorgian gaze and the stars. It was a great cast.
It was a bit sweet, this interview. I thought it might be a bit more violent, a bit more anger and all that, but it was all good. It was all nice.
We can do that next time.
Perfect. I'm ready. Let's go. Get it on.
Thanks, Mark.